Here we go. John Curley, Sherry Elliker Show, you coming along for the ride. You are much appreciated. This camera's supposed to follow me back here, Sherry. There we are. Okay. Teeny Tiny, she's choosing the letter of the day. It is a great honor bestowed upon a woman who lives in a pickle jar. And all you got to do is write, thank you, Teeny, whatever that's supposed to be. Write to us at the Muckleser Casino Resort text line at 1-888-973-5476. All welcome. We'll talk about the bridge, but first, diamond in the door.
Camera. They were supposed to turn that feature off.
This camera follows me everywhere. I see you. Oh. Wow. Was it 5 o'clock in the morning there in Baltimore, right, when the freighter lost power, couldn't turn left or right, and then I guess it was the current that took it directly into one of the support beams of the F. Scott. The Key Bridge there in Baltimore. I know you've gone over it many times, Sherry. In fact, although you hated the bridge because you thought it was not safe when you lived there in Baltimore. And as it turns out, I think still, how many are still missing? They think about 6 people altogether that might have went into the water.
This actually happened at 1:30 in the morning. And there was construction crew that were filling some potholes on the bridge. Mm-hmm. Because the ship called out a mayday, they were able to tell people or stop bridge traffic. There wasn't that much of it anyway at 1:30 in the morning, but they were able to stop it, which prevented cars from crossing it, which could have been an even greater disaster. So 8 people from the construction crew went into the water. One didn't even need medical help when he got pulled out. The other one is in critical condition at shock trauma. The other 6, they've just found one of them. And the other 5 are still missing. They've also have found 5 vehicles under there, which are like a cement truck. So these were clearly things that were on the bridge in that construction site that are now in the water. Right. They believe that what happened was it was a loss of power with the ship. And this didn't take long. I knew this would happen, but there's already speculation, according to the Daily Mail, that there was a design flaw in the bridge that could have saved people, that they didn't have this thing. It's like a fender that takes the brunt of the ship when the ship hits it. It's if there's these fenders that are put on, that will help, you know, a bridge. Because that bridge, I don't know if you saw the video, it went down like that. And they didn't want to make those improvements because they were like $3 million. But right now they're saying that it's like a $15 million a day in economic activity. Because remember how much cargo goes through that port in that area.
And of course, already conspiracy theories that, you know, this was intentional to take this out. It's like, okay, be jumping in there with their own wackadoodle theory, you know, the freighter. The president said, well, that it's weird. He said that he went over the bridge often on a train. There's no trains go across the bridge. So of course, he said he decided to make it by himself, that he crossed over that bridge often, and then said that the federal government would be rebuilding it, right? That they would get in there right away. Well, you assume, why isn't the freighter company, I don't know what kind of insurance they have for something like this, but I mean, they never would be able to cover the total complete cost of this bridge and the rebuilding of it. It'll be interesting to see how quickly they can get this thing done. Most projects take years and years and years. They're always over budget and they're never delivered on time. But this is a really important part of transportation there in Baltimore. Was it 695 it connects to? Which is a mess of a highway anyway.
And you can take a tunnel or a bridge. I always took the tunnel, even though I don't like tunnels either. But that bridge was so high, it scared me to death. I mean, it wasn't that I thought it was unsafe necessarily. I just felt like it's that weird that it's actually called something. I don't know what it is, where you have this fleeting thought you might drive off of it or jump out of a high building or something like that. And I never felt comfortable. I avoided that bridge all the time. And they're saying that, you know, they don't know yet. I read one place where they said that the person on that ship was actually somebody that was trained at that port to be, to know what it, how to get through under the bridge and all of that. And yet they're saying, I mean, it, something else will come out. Somebody might have been drunk. Somebody might have been this. I mean, this is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the information we'll be getting.
Right. But the May Day call, as I believe the governor said, that that was really the thing that allowed them to be able to have so few, because if cars, as you said, were going over.
Was there any way to shut down the bridge? Was there enough time for that distress call to trigger something like that?
Now, the thing that we know is that, you know, even as the boat was coming in, you know, we had a ship that was coming in at 8 knots. So coming in at a very rapid speed. We do know that the investigation is currently going on. But I have to say I'm thankful for the folks who once the, you know, once the warning came up and once notification came up that there was a mayday, who literally by being able to stop cars from coming over the bridge, these people are heroes. They saved lives. They saved lives last night.
It's, I think it's, is it the third largest, longest expansion bridge in the United States? Is it 1.9 miles or something? I forget the numbers I'd seen earlier this morning. Yeah.
Yeah.
A similar bridge in Florida was constructed, and I think it also got knocked down. And then they put these things called dolphins. It's like these concrete blocks that are in the water that's supposed to slow things down if freighter gets close or runs into it, just something to protect the superstructure of the bridge so something like this doesn't happen. But, God, what a helpless, horrible feeling for everybody involved, but even for the people that were the captain of this freighter to have this going through there and then knowing that just lose control of it. And there's nothing you could do. Couldn't reverse engines on it. No side thrusters, anything that would be able to, you know, change the course of it. And then just to hit it. It's the video is just unbelievable how quickly it just all just collapsed right there.
I believe it was the mayor of Baltimore that asked them to please ask CNN to please stop showing it over and over again.
Yeah, why?
I don't know, because it was painful or traumatic or something. I'm sorry, Mayor Brown. That is news, and that's what happens when there's a newsworthy event. But yeah, it's tragic. I don't remember what the number was, but it's tens of thousands of people cross that bridge every day. So in terms of just the commuter aspect of it, it's disastrous because everyone will have to be rerouted. How long will it take to get that thing reconstructed? Who knows? Congress will have to approve the money, apparently, that Joe Biden has promised.
Yeah.
Which they will.
I think it was $45 million a year. Is the number of cars crossing over that bridge. That's the number that I had seen, if memory serves me correctly, earlier this morning while I was planting my sunflower seeds for the year.
Oh, Sherry. Well, Marjorie Taylor Greene, as you mentioned, is it possible that Israel directed the freighter to strike the bridge? And and David Simon said, oh, I know. She said, we need to worry about whether or not it was an attack or an accident. She went on to say a bunch of other stuff. David Simon, of course, who is from Baltimore, David Simon wrote Homicide in the Wire, said that she is a submoronic pratfall of a human being.
Okay.
He always did overwrite a bit.
Yeah. Oh, Joe wrote me in. 31,000 per day, 11 million per year. Thank you, Joe, for correcting me on the air like that. Thanks a lot.
I did it quietly.
I know. No, I don't mind. That's fine. There are the numbers to everybody. The there's a guy, I guess he wants attention. I hate the fact that we're going to do the story because all he wants is attention, but he's a North Texas man. He's decided to change his name to literally anybody else. Ugh. Is it anybody or anyone?
I thought you would like this because you could rail against the use of the word literally.
Oh, God, gentlemen. Okay.
Running for president.
How y'all doing?
Isn't easy.
Are they doing it?
But a catchy name.
Literally anybody else? Yeah. That's my name.
Is a start.
Hey. Hey, how's it going?
So what do I call you, Mr. Else?
No, he's not joking.
My name is literally anybody else, and I'm running for president of the United States.
And it says so right here on his Texas license.
You know, it's not necessarily about me as a person, but it's about literally anybody else as an idea.
Literally anybody else is a seventh grade math teacher from North Richland Hills, Army veteran.
Howdy, sir.
A 35-year-old now running for president in his first year of eligibility.
Donald Trump, Joe Biden, they're under it would be literally anybody else.
And the reason why?
300 million people. We can do better.
You might find relatable.
There really should be some outlet.
Not that many voters, but anyway.
For folks like me who are just so fed up with this constant power grab between the two parties that just has no benefit to the common person.
Before he was Mr. Else, he was Dustin Eby in the eyes of the state, a voter with centrist beliefs and wholly dissatisfied with the current candidates Republicans and Democrats are offering for the White House in November. So he changed his name and began his candidacy.
Who are you voting for?
Kind of as a protest.
Literally anybody else for president. It's a real item.
Statistically, Mr. Else doesn't stand a chance. In Texas, just to get on the ballot as an independent, he needs more than 113,000 signatures from non-primary voters by mid-May.
You satisfied with Trump and Biden? We have a third option.
This is him trying to grab some of those signatures before a Stars game. Mm. And yeah.
You don't follow much?
Politics ain't easy. Other states, they have similar requirements. Else's best shot is applying to be a write-in candidate where signatures aren't okay. often needed.
Write the name in. Write the name in the ballot.
But winning, not really the point. In his mind, it's a statement about the current state.
We don't have a neither option on the ballot. And this kind of fills that role.
Y'all take care.
In Dallas, I'm Matt Howerton.
Okay. With literally anybody else. Well, the other one would be Robert Kennedy Jr. He made his announcement today as to who he picked for a VP. They were thinking Aaron Rodgers was going to be one choice, right? Or he was going to go with Jesse the Body Ventura, former governor of Minnesota, former wrestler. So he's gone with Nicole Shanahan. They might not know the name. She is now a billionaire because she divorced the husband, the guy from Google. She got $1 billion and she's given it away. She's got all sorts of different causes that she believes in. So here is Robert Kennedy Jr., the third party candidate, explaining
why. I found exactly the right person. And among other things, she has used over the past several years cutting-edge technology, including AI, to calculate the catastrophic health consequences of toxins in our soil, our air, our water, and our food. Technology has been a lifelong passion for my future vice president. This is important because I also wanted a vice president who shares my indignation about the participation of big tech as a partner in the censorship and the surveillance and the information warfare that our government is currently waging against the American people.
Okay. He doesn't mention it, but she also has $1 billion. And she's going to give him the money. Not a billion, but she's going to give him a lot of money.
She's already given him $4.5 million to the super PAC that funded him, and she's behind funding in large part that Super Bowl commercial. Remember that commercial where
yes.
they tried to use like John Kennedy's image
yes.
and
yeah.
things like that?
Yeah.
She's behind that.
Okay.
She calls herself a disillusioned Democrat, and she also has a daughter named Echo who is on the autism spectrum, and she believes that the autism is caused by environmental things, toxic substances, mm-hmm. and maybe too many medicines on top of each other. So she's
yeah.
kind of the anti-vax group.
Okay. And she has a lot of money, and she's going to give money. Right now, Joe Biden's team is getting ready to knock Robert Kennedy Jr. out as quickly as they can, because polls are showing that although he hurts Trump and Biden, he hurts Biden more. Biden will need every single vote, and there is concern for Robert Kennedy Jr.'s existence there as a third-party candidate. And his history shows that the sitting president the incumbent loses if there's a third-party candidate who is at least polling double digits. Ross Perot, Ralph Nader doesn't count as much. I guess Ralph Nader, I don't know how many Ralph Nader took, but Florida is really the determining factor in there. But Ross Perot anyway. So third party candidates can hurt the sitting president, as history shows. And Joe Biden's doing so poorly anyway. Just anything they could do to just try to you know, close that gap. And Robert Kennedy takes some voters away from old Joe. Do you want to hear a little bit from her? Here she
is. It is so good to be here in Oakland. This city will always have a special place in my heart. You know, I grew up just a few miles from this very spot.
She goes on to talk about her life. So the her mother, she was a single mom. I don't know if her father passed away. I can't remember who it was.
He was a drug addict or an alcoholic or something.
Oh, yeah. She was very poor, grew up very poor. The mother worked extremely hard. I think the mom worked in an office of some sort. And then she got a job at 12 working in a restaurant. At 15, she was working in a restaurant. She studied hard, did very well, went to college and ended up getting a degree as a lawyer working with, what was it, patents or something like that? I can't remember if she was exactly involved in that. But she ends up meeting the guy from Google. And I think one of the problems that caused some consternation in the relationship, she had had a one-night stand with Elon Musk, Sherry.
While she was married to the Google guy?
Yeah.
That's like a whole... That's like... I don't know. That's a whole tech soap opera. My goodness.
She said it wasn't love. It was just one kind of nothing happened afterwards. It was sort of a fling. So.
Oh, okay. I don't know that I pick him for. No, I don't know that I never read that. I don't know that I pick Elon as a fling.
Okay.
Well, I mean, if he had all the men in the world.
Okay, Jeff Bezos, you get a hall pass. Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk?
Oh, totally Jeff Bezos.
Jeff Bezos or Bill Gates?
Oh, Jeff Bezos.
Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates or Steve Ballmer?
Who's that?
Okay, I guess it's Bill Gates. Thanks, Sherry. I will. Right after take my car to Bucky's Auto Service Centers. Because they've got 16 locations, been around for 54 years. It's Bucky's Auto Service Centers. I'm a big fan of Barry Weiss. I love her podcast, honestly. I listen to it religiously. It is part of my Saturday routine. I just think she is brilliant. She was a writer over there at the New York Times and then kind of got forced out, left, couldn't stand all the woke stuff. She's on a crusade to get rid of DEI. She's brilliant. And if you want to get a very, very interesting take on what's happening with Israel, I highly recommend her podcast. She says just great interviews. And she had a woman on the other day. And it's under The Kids Are Not All Right. Abigail Schreier has written a book. She said she was found it really interesting that so many kids were having so many problems. She said, if you think about it, kids today in America are the richest, most privileged, safest generation we have ever had. I mean, just they've got everything right there for them, everything. But yet so many of them have so many problems, so much stress, so much anxiety. This is how the podcast
An influential
begins.
National panel of health experts is recommending for the first time that children ages 8 and up be screened for anxiety. The CDC estimates that in 2020, nearly 6 million kids in the U.S. were diagnosed with anxiety.
In a recent report covering 80,000 youth globally, it found that symptoms of depression and anxiety doubled during the pandemic, with 25% of youth experiencing symptoms of depression and 20% experiencing symptoms of anxiety.
So Schreier's on with Barry Weiss, and she is looking into it. She's done a study on what's the problem, like why do kids have so many problems, stress and anxiety and depression, and why suicide is so high and all this. So she sort of walks through and she describes it as Barry talks about the paradox of American kids.
The paradox is clear. American kids, American young people, are the freest, most privileged people in all of human history. At the same time, they're also the most sad. They are the most anxious, depressed, and medicated generation on record. Nearly a third of American teen girls say they have seriously considered suicide. For boys, that number was still an alarming 14%. And that's to say nothing of the amalgam of other mental health diagnoses, depression, anxiety, ADHD, that are all climbing across the board.
So the big we get into the big picture of why are things like this, and it turns out that therapy, you know, you think therapy is going to help you. I don't know if we have it in this cut or not, Joe, but Schreier points out, she says, listen, you know, we all know that if you go to get an x-ray, you're going to get some radiation, but you have to get the x-ray to tell if the bone is broken. So the medicine itself, that in form of the x-ray, you know, is you take the good with the bad, right? The side effects of medicines and things, because there's side effects to therapy. And if you don't need therapy, and if parents are turning their kids over to therapy, then it actually causes some damage as well. But she sort of gives the big picture of what it looks like.
Give us the big picture of what therapy right now for young Americans looks like, and if there's a distinction between the rate or the type for boys and girls.
Sure. So therapy, what I call bad therapy, was being crop dusted across the entire generation through tons of interventions in schools, various social emotional learning interventions that look a lot like group therapy often, mental health surveys. Parents were also taking up the mantle, and they were letting therapists guide their parenting. So kids were being raised by therapeutic techniques. So it wasn't just the, say, 40% of kids who actually were on the couch. We were seeing bad therapy, what I call bad therapy, that is iatrogenic therapy, on the entire generation. They are swimming in it. Now, in terms of boys and girls, there's no question teen girls are suffering the most.
So she talks about the fact that parents have lost confidence in being a parent, and they're turning it over to experts, and then you get this gentle parenting and this other stuff. And I skip down here to the end. Is this stimulating some responses for you, Sherry, from this thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I know a lot of parents that were gentle parents, and they discussed everything. The kids never got in trouble, and they became spoiled adults. They became adults that don't think they have to follow any rules because they didn't as a kid. I mean, didn't you have a lot? We had rules in our house, that's for sure. And
well,
I mean,
And she says part of the problem is that people are not having enough kids. If you only have one kid, then all your focus is on that.
Where
one
is that
kid.
Lack of self-confidence coming from? Mm-hmm. We became very suspicious of informal relationships. They seemed to us inadequate and even sometimes a little sinister. So we felt like the lay person didn't know what they were doing. Grandma couldn't be trusted. She would give him gluten. Aunts and uncles, they would say the wrong thing or hurt their feelings. Cousins would be too rough with them. We needed to hire a professional. They were the people we could trust. And the professionals we overwhelmingly turned to were mental health professionals.
But why did that happen?
I think it happened because we really believed that child rearing was more complicated. And we made it more complicated in part by having fewer kids.
Right. If one kid, you focus on that one kid, one kid's needs. This is really illuminating. She talks about seeing these kids get dropped off at this school, and the parent had five kids, and then the dynamics between the relationships.
I dropped my kids off to school just yesterday. It was in the morning, and I watched this amazing thing. A family of five kids pulled up right in front of me in a Suburban. It was a big car. And the oldest son was, I think, just turning 14. And he gets out of the car, his younger brother gets out of the car, and then he turns around, he circles back to the back of the car, and he picks up his little sister off the seat and places her down on the sidewalk so she can walk the rest of the way into school. And I just thought, how beautiful that one little act is. That young man knows that his job is not just to think about himself. No, he's one of five kids, and he's been told by mom, there are other people in this family. He is now on his way in such a profound way that he's already thinking about others, his siblings.
See, that's what you were saying, Sherry.
And that's what siblings used to do for us. They made us tougher, they teased us, and they made fun of us, but they also made us think about someone other than ourselves, and they made us connected to someone other than ourselves.
See?
Mm-hmm.
See, I did good things by teasing my sister.
Yeah, you boy, if that is the remedy, she is in good shape. if teasing.
But the gentle
helps.
Parenting is right, is to make the kid feel like, oh, your emotions, you know, you're like, you're not really a kid. You're just like a little person.
Yes.
And we're going to treat you like a little person. And therefore, you know, how are you feeling? And what are you thinking? And, you know, how does that make you feel? This gentle parenting thing is really screwing
these kids
up.
Tell us a little bit about how gentle parenting came about and how so many really smart, sophisticated people came to adopt it and really abide by its rules.
I mean, this was the ultimate in therapeutic parenting. Remember, a therapist doesn't judge and they don't put themselves above you. They simply meet you where you are and try to understand your pain. And they give you choices. And that is the way parents are to conduct themselves. They don't ever discipline. They try never to say no if they can avoid it. They certainly never punish. And they wouldn't even think of spanking. In fact, a timeout is too much for them. That's too much trauma. They instead give the child a series of choices. Would you prefer the red cup or the blue cup? Oh, no, you spilled your Cheerios on the floor. You just threw the cup at me. What should we do about that?
Oh. Oh, I see these people in the supermarket. I just want to go over and take their child away from them. Yeah.
But
so
they
she explains.
Think,
Yeah, go ahead.
No, the people in the supermarket, the people that do that, they truly believe it is a kinder and more gentle way to parent, and therefore the kid will be raised in a more reasonable fashion, and they'll be reasonable people.
No, we don't have time for it, but she goes on to explain, no, you need to be the authority.
Okay.
And the kid wants you to be the authority, wants to see that there's somebody in control that's correcting their behavior in a loving way. They said, do it that way. You are loving and caring, but you are the authority figure. Your kid wants that. And then what happens, she goes on to explain, the kid will want to become like you, will want to get their driver's license, will get a job, will want to be independent, because they see that, oh, if I'm like my parents as an authority figure, I get to move up into the world and be an adult. I want to take off and take on the world rather than stay home and not be engaged in anything and be constantly have somebody checking in on how I'm feeling, and my emotions and my feelings are the most important thing. Just it's I think we're doing a great disservice to these kids. Really.
And also
really
that they're the center of the universe. So they think that that's all their parents are living for is them, and that everybody should regard them in that way.
Yeah, they're all gifted.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's not true. Good
I just want to go
that.
Over and take their child away from them. Yeah, but in a nice way. And then take the parent and explain to the parent, listen, you're not helping the kid. We don't have time, but real quick, last part. She says that the problem is because so many of these parents now came from homes from divorce, so they wanted to make sure that the kids were coddled and safe, and just really, really messing up an entire generation. I'd like to take kids, put them in a time machine, take them back to where I grew up and have them be raised by my father and my mother. They'd turn out just like me.
That's
or
good.
My brother, who's a bigger success than I am. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. If you're just joining us, we're talking about Barry Weiss's podcast. Honestly, I'm a huge fan of Barry and the work that she does. You can also follow her and see her work at Free Press. So the question that Barry was talking to Ms. Schreier about, who had written this book about why are the kids not all right, she said, what is the best type of parenting, Sharon? It's known. And I think this is the family you came from. I did, and so many others that are sort of our generation. It's called parental authoritarian parenting. See if this is.
Why does parental authority matter? Why does it matter to a kid's mental health that their parent is in charge, that they don't think they're in charge? Well, two reasons. One is that.
Yes.
It gives a child an incredible amount of security to know that someone's in charge, that it isn't them, because they know they're not up to being in charge, and that it's the people who love them most. Not the person mom hired because she feels that she's outmatched, but mom's in charge, dad's in charge, whoever's in charge, it's not me. That actually gives a kid a lot of security. And having the person who's in charge be your parent does something else for you. It means parents aren't on the same level as me. Now I have something to aspire to.
Yeah, you aspire to it. So you you know, want to be, you know, you want to be like an adult, right? Get that driver's license. Remember that feeling when your parents would hire a, like a bad babysitter and you're just feeling like, oh, we can sort of take advantage of this. But then you're like, wait, who's going to help us if something horrible happens? Did you ever have that?
Yeah, I mean, we had the same babysitter. And she lived right down. She lived with her mom and dad right down the street. And her mom made Barbie clothes. And so whenever she would come over, she'd bring us little Barbie dresses. So I couldn't wait to have her babysit just because I got something.
I see. Okay. All right. You didn't care about the rest of it.
Not really.
Here are the three things you need for
healthy kids. We did three other things to change childhood that we've been consistently doing more and more of, and it's a problem. First of all, parental authority. Kids need parental authority. They need parents who are in charge. Okay? The mental health professionals are the number one force undermining parents' authority, making them feel that they don't understand their kids on a deep enough level and they don't know what's right for their kids. Two, independence. We stopped giving our kids independence and allowing them surveillance-free risky play. We stopped doing this because the mental health experts terrified us, not just about physical pain, but about trauma. We felt we could never look away because these kids could suffer from trauma. And the third things we denied kids that every kid, every childhood has needed since the dawn of time are stable relationships over time, loving, intimate relationships, cousins, brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, grandparents, people, neighbor kids, people around who love you, not the therapist you hired, not the soccer coach who sees you once a week, who might be very nice, and not the nanny you hired, but the people who love you unconditionally over a lifetime. That makes for strong and healthy kids.
Yeah, not the woman bringing you Barbie clothes.
But I did love her. She was great.
Oh, yeah. Abigail Schreier, why the kids are not all right.
Yeah. I know what Barbie is.
Okay, thank you. I wonder how many parents are sort of raising the kids old school.
I don't know any parent that doesn't have a kid in therapy. Almost every parent I know that has a kid still in high school, and it doesn't really go. I mean, it's therapy, most people believe, is for, you know, a little while until you get better. No. It's usually forever because you think you need it after you've been there for a while. So anyway, yeah, most people that I know, their kids are in therapy, all of them, for no particular reason, just because they think that's what they need to do.
Yeah, my kids were not depressed. They weren't anxious. They weren't all stressed out. I didn't know what was wrong with them, so I sent them to a therapist.
How'd they do?
That's a joke.
Oh. Wow. I'm sorry. I didn't hear the rim shot, so
No, it's all right. I don't have to explain it. All right. Thank you, Andrew. There we go.